The federal government has ruled that the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe should not have qualified for the 321 acres of reservation land in Massachusetts that it was granted in 2015, essentially dissolving the tribe's claim to that land. Here's Tribal Chairman Cedric Cromwell reacting to the news last week.
It's more than a slap in the face. It's almost like they're trying to send a death knell. And it's painful because if you look at the history of my tribe, we've constantly fought for homelands.
Tribal leaders are comparing this decision to previous policies to assimilate Native people, like the 1887 General Allotment Act. Cedric Woods is director of the Institute for New England Native American Studies at the University of Massachusetts Boston, and he joins me now in the studio. Hi, Cedric.
Good afternoon.
So let's start with this 2015 decision under the Obama administration that put the land into trust in the first place. How significant was something like that?
It's extremely significant for a tribe to have territory over which it can exercise undisputed civil and criminal jurisdiction. And that's exactly what the reservation status creates. When you look at federal Indian law as it's evolved from the 19th century forward, power to tax tribes is the power to destroy. By having a land in trust, it removes that threat from tribes, from states or other jurisdictions.
Okay, so fast forward 3 years to 2018, the Trump administration goes back on the government's promise. What's the basis for the Interior Department's decision to take that land out of trust, essentially dissolving the reservation?
One of the things that occurred relatively recently is the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that in order for the federal government to take land into trust on behalf of a tribe, it had to be under federal jurisdiction at the time of the passage of the Indian Reorganization Act in 1934. From what I can read into the early reports and my preliminary analysis of this ruling is they differentiate between federal awareness that the tribe existed, which they absolutely did at the time of the Indian Reorganization Act and prior to that, versus federal jurisdiction. And they did not see that it met that particular standard.
So the federal government is essentially saying that they haven't been dealing with the people of this tribe in a formal way for long enough.
In 1934, that's the critical piece here.
Okay, so it is complicated, as Native American law tends to be with the United States government. But by forming this reservation, there was something important that happened here. It allowed the tribe to start building a casino. And the decision to take that away has put a stop to that economic development project. Now, the citizens of the tribe are saying that it's much more than that. I want to hear something from Vice Chairwoman of the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe, Jessie Little Doe Baird, who's testifying to a Senate committee last month. And she's talking about how the reservation land helped revive the Wampanoag language.
Having a reservation allowed us to open our own tribal school. Here, Wampanoag children attend a tribally run preschool and kindergarten where they're taught in our language. It would be nearly impossible in an off-reservation school to exercise this level of cultural sovereignty.
What do you make of that? What does a community stand to lose by losing the reservation?
I'd say that the loss of self-governance is a way to destroy tribes. And so control over territory, whether it's civil action or civil activities like this school, or criminal jurisdiction, both of those things are essential powers of self-governance. Mm-hmm. So whether it's zoning regulations for construction of homes, a civil code to regulate domestic relationships, custody of children, marriages, divorces, all those things that we think of in the general way that governments function, that's being removed now from the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe. And by the way, this is of great interest to Indian country more broadly because I think this represents the first time that land has been taken out of trust status against the wishes of the tribe since the termination era of the 1950s.
Let's talk about that. This was when the government tried to assimilate Native Americans into the mainstream culture and essentially ended recognition of tribal sovereignty. And if you go back even further than that, I mean, this is something that has happened ever since the United States government and Native people started making agreements with one another. As soon as the ink was dry, they were ripped up. So put all of this into context, how this fits into something that's been happening for many, many generations.
It is very much part of a broader pattern. Vine Deloria Jr., one of the foremost American Indian intellectuals of the 20th century, described federal Indian policy as like a pendulum, swinging from one extreme to another, from some federal actions being relatively pro-Indian to those being virulently anti-Indian and racist. And we've seen the entire spectrum of things even within the 20th century.
There is another option. There's a bill that's circulating through Congress that would preserve the reservation. What do you think of that option? Do lawmakers in Washington want to touch this at all?
They may not want to, but I'd say they're morally obligated to do so. The Indian Reorganization Act was passed to undo the harm done by the General Allotment Act. Nothing was ever passed in Massachusetts or at the federal level to undo the harm of the Massachusetts Allotment Act. So if it was wrong when the federal government did it, it was also wrong when the state of Massachusetts did it. And both are due for remedies.
Cedric Wood is director of the Institute for New England Native American Studies at the University of Massachusetts Boston. Cedric, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.